Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with a very special part two episode for you of our exclusive interview with John Warner IV, the son of the late Virginia Senator John Warner III and banking heiress Catherine Mellon. Now, in part one, John exposed the UFO threat op that he believes is using his cousin, former defense official Chris Mellon, and counterintelligence agent Lou Elizondo for a false deep state-directed UFO disclosure. He also revealed the hidden history of the Mellon banking family, as we've never seen before. In this episode, he'll go even further and reveal more deep truths of the elite connections between advanced technology, secret finance, and a false alien invasion op that's being engineered by covert forces in and out of government.
And I think Chris and Lou are out there doing a song and dance because whoever they represent, they're the ones that want to slow it down to molasses in winter.
Please join us now as we go deep on the Elite Files and UFO threat op.
There's one thing we missed in there that you pointed out to me and that I find fascinating, which is that the Mellon family is an Irish family.
Yes. We're Protestant Irish from Ulster, Ireland.
Okay.
The family lore is in the 18th century, you know, we were horse thieves and potato farmers, but there's a lot of English blood in there. And on my father's side, Scottish, the Stuart clan, which is interesting on its own thing. I get these bloodline people calling me up, oh, the Stuarts, you know, it's too much. And so if the royal family really were friends with Andrew Mellon in 1931, that means that probably some of our predecessors were also chummy with the royal family, going back a little further.
The Windsors.
I don't know about bloodlines. There's no direct, none of that is court. You know, we don't have royal bloodlines, but there's something there because the Queen being best friends with my grandfather and having known his father and all that stuff. You know, he has a KBE. My dad had a KBE. You know.
That's remarkable.
Very chummy stuff and something, you know, I've read all the occult. So I, you know, it's, are there Anunnaki bloodlines? You know, maybe. I don't know. It certainly makes sense on a, if just a psychological level, whether or not, you know, everyone on Earth has Anunnaki DNA or not. You know, oh, but you have more. You know, it's like, well, so? You know, I mean, I don't know, but there's something. There's a connection with the Mellons and the royal family that's tight.
And, you visited that aristocracy in England, and you said some of their attitudes, you know, how they consider Americans colonials, for example. That's pretty interesting. How would you describe their attitude?
I'll tell you, I'll be quick about it. 1993, Farnborough Airshow. I'm there with Dad and a bunch of military people. After the show, we went to Lord Muckety Muck. I don't remember his name. Giant palace, country house. You know, I don't know if he was a duke, probably somebody in that British aristocracy. And believe me, I've been to a lot of these parties and houses of these people. I'm not saying they're all bad people. They're not. It's just like everyone else. But the few in the, you know, the few fascists there are. There was a dinner and there were many nationalities of military and corporate personnel, you know, selling airplanes and other things. And Lord Mighty Buck got up and he was drunk and he started making jokes about American colonials and how backwards we were and how if General Howe had only turned right, at the Battle of Concord or, you know, Lexington or whatever, you know, they would have won. And I said, no, the British, the Virginia riflemen and more under Morgan, you know. He hated that, but he got up and started making fun of us. He said that Americans should eat their homeless. And the room went silent, and a few of the English people chuckled, and I guess some of the Russians, I don't know. But I started to get up, because I was going to leave. And my dad's liaison guy, I think it was Colonel Campbell of the Marines, I'm not sure who it was, but he put a hand on my shoulder, and he whispered in my ear, and he said, listen, this is the shit we have to take to do deals with these people. And I said, I don't understand why is the British aristocracy involved with, you know, weapons? Isn't that the British military? And he's like, we have to deal with all of them because they're all interconnected. I was pissed. My dad looked at me. He just said, don't do it. I was angry. I was 20. I was 32. I was somewhat naive back then. I'd known about the MJ-12 files, but how everything else worked in the military-industrial complex, I didn't know. I'll never forget that. A lot of them are that arrogant. They think they're the top dogs of the world. They look down on everyone.
Amazing.
They call us colonials to our faces. And I'm like, yeah, American Revolution. You know, all my Scotch-Irish brethren in the Blue Ridge Mountains, yeah, they kicked your ass. You know, they always, the French didn't come. And I said, well, you guys, guerrilla war. You know, I know all that history backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. In fact, an English guy just wrote a book about how the British generals lost the war. Parliament had problems. You know, that was a clue to me that the royals, you know, what the hell do they have to do with arms sales?
Right.
And now we know they are deeply involved in all that. I mean, come on, Queen of England, she's probably worth in the hundreds of trillions, if not quadrillions, probably. I don't know. But, you know, certainly the other royal bloodlines, I've been told by someone who's of the royal bloodline, he's a German. They said, oh, she's top dog. Don't let anyone fool you. And, you know, I said, aren't the royals going poor? And he's like, no. No royal person goes poor.
Wow.
If they do, they privately fund them. You know, they've got hoards of Swiss tunnels full of gold, art treasures. I mean, it's, you know, everything that Farrell talks about as far as the Octagon Group in Switzerland, I mean, these people have unlimited money. These royal bloodline families and everything. And the Committee of 300 families only get richer. I'm telling you, it makes sense to piece a lot of this stuff, esoteric stuff together. The Order of the Garter, all those ribbons and medals the British wear, the royals and everybody, you know, they all have occult meanings, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, all these things, the black robes, you know, the versions of Saturn, the worship of the darkness. I mean, this is really disturbing stuff. But once you really go deep like you do, it starts to make perfect sense, which is the scary part. I mean, you know, for me, it's just been.
It's fascinating. Do you think with all the kind of like the lockdown, the kind of almost fascist activity that they were doing, and even with the idea of the alien threat, that on some level they realize the public has caught on to who they are and what they are, and that they need some mechanism to get the public kind of penned back in so that they're under control again? Because if they don't do something like a huge false flag involving aliens or something along this line, that people are just going to look at those families and say, they're rich, they're getting richer, they've controlled munitions, they've controlled the wall of secrecy, they control governments. At a certain point, there'd just be a large-scale revolution against them.
I think it's a numbers game, personally. What is this disclosure movement worldwide now? Let's just be generous. 10 million people?
Yeah.
What is that out of 7.7 billion?
Not a lot.
It's, you know, yeah, there's a few people on the edges, you know, nibbling around the brown edges of the butter cookie, but they don't want to take a bite. I think they have us by numbers. And that's why a lot of military people are still very concerned and scared for their reputations and their careers, is because we are vastly outgunned and outnumbered. It's, you know, there's got to be some cosmic God, you know, act of God that would help us in really changing the world to one of transparency and, you know, our real history. I just don't see any other way. Awareness is growing, but it's not fast enough. I don't think you need a ton of people, but I think you need 5% of the world. A friend of mine, my friend Penny said that to me. She said, you need 5%. And what is that? 360 million, 370 million? That might be doable within 25 years. And that could shift the balance. Most people are just working as death slaves. They don't have time to think deeply. you know, I know a lot of blue collar people. They're like, this is really interesting. I don't have time to dig into any of that. They don't even have time to read my book or even read, you know, maybe a snippet of something.
Right.
It's all by design. We, you know, your subscribers know all this. This is a very intricate machine that they built this planet out of. Religions and everything serve to control Ahriman, the eighth sphere of our reality. I mean, those guys said it back in the day.
Yeah.
Steiner was very long-winded, like Steiner. It's like 100 pages to get like one page. Okay. Could have said that a little bit more brief
or more succinct.
But those were the days of doing that. I think he had to kind of tiptoe through the tulips on a lot of that stuff in the 20s. You know, well, I won't say Anunnaki, but I'll say Sumerian 15-foot godlike beings.
Right.
Omnipotent power.
Right. Well, I've always been amazed at how much he seemed to be looking right into our time here in the 21st century. What I want to do, actually, is bring us back to what they're doing with this false alien invasion op. And the question is, I think, how do the forces behind it react when someone like you comes forward and undercuts their false threat narrative?
It's a numbers game. I think they, you know, Chris and Lou, they're like, you know, they don't care about me. They know that they've got us all outgunned. They're going to do their thing. I'm hoping we're going to get a ninth inning, you know, some benevolent ET help. But, you know, I understand the concept that they want us to do this, the hard work ourselves.
Yeah.
I understand that. I also think, you know, okay, but, you know, it's looking like we're all going to lose this battle if we don't have, you know, something to shift consciousness. And I think we're all trying to do our small bits to try and do that.
Do you think that the people in those 300 families, that they are fighting kind of a losing battle by clinging to the secrecy?
Yeah, I mean, I get this question a lot. If I had to guess, I know a lot of these people. I mean, they have more money. They're concerned with their jets and their yachts. And, you know, I got a bar, and they're just oblivious. The few that know something about what we're talking about, I think they're scared out of their minds to do anything about it, because they're surrounded by, you know, you go to the yacht club with country club and these big ones, and they, you know, like the Rolling Rock Club with the Mellons and others in Pennsylvania, you know, you don't talk about certain things within the club or its environs. And I did. I went up to Chris with my cousin and my sister and I think my nephew, and was like, hey, we all got the same UFO hobby. And he was like, yeah, hey, you don't talk about that. Don't talk shop in here.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
You know, and it's like, you know, these people are just as ignorant and fooled and as anyone else. They just have a ton of money. They have a million other things they can do. They're not passionate about this as you and I are. They would if they understood. But, you know, it is frustrating.
Do you think that you're the only person from that kind of group that has come to speak out about these things?
As far as I know, and I could be wrong, I'm the only one now. I think Lawrence Rockefeller back in the day was trying to do something with Greer, but that was all involved with Hillary Clinton. I don't think it was Greer's fault, but I think that was all
politics.
Yeah, that was all, you know, there's a lot of strange things going on there. And I don't think Hillary's heart was into disclosure whatsoever. I'm not really sure what, you know, Stephen can describe that, but as far as I know, I don't know anybody from, I hope more people do, but, you know.
Hillary had Podesta, that was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant or I'm not a real big person myself. My story is not that big a deal, but I mean, my grandfather, Paul Mellon, OSS, Mary Mellon was a mystic, Carl Jung, my father was, you know, a senator for 30 years, senator military industrial complex, somebody called him in the press. I mean, I've got so many tangents connecting with me, it's kind of like my higher self is just going, really? Can you wake up a little and do some work? You know, for years. And
your stepmom was Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, I believe in UFOs and ETs, you know. And you know, people send me books like this, Secrets of World War II History. And I'm like, you know, I learned nothing. I read a book by Annie Jacobson, who's a good writer. I met her at a book signing on the SS. I learned a couple new things. Yeah, they had a polished latrine here, and they had a food service. But nothing about the tool is
very superficial. Yeah.
I'm like, I have 600 books in my library. Cabinets are all full of books. And I read one, I read all Farrell's and all the good ones. And then these other ones are all guys who are, well, I know the Thule Society was into marshmallows in the SS torchlight parades. And, you know, Thule, Black, Lords of the Black Stone, you sure that's all rumor? And that's it. It's like one paragraph. Yeah. You know the deal. I can't even watch a video if anybody is anymore, unless it's on something metaphysical that's interesting or philosophical. It's just, you know, it's Jim Mars's stuff. It's good. You know, it's, but the rest of it is just, you know, anything that's considered fringe, a publisher won't, most big publishers won't touch. That's why I publish my own books. No way. Anunnaki, what's that? Take that out of there. You know, they'll make you edit their books. One guy said, I'll edit your book for free and we'll publish it out of, you know, Deep State Publishing, you know, in New York City. And I said, no way. You know, because they said, well, I said, okay, I'll have it edited. And they said, oh no, part of the deal is we edit it. We edit it.
Right.
So
that is, it's that filtering system. It gets back to it. And this is the holding back information problem. And it's throughout the society. And a lot of it, like you said, has to do with fundamentally people have a threshold and a comfort zone for information that they can take in. And they've been dumbed down through the media for the last 60 years, especially on this subject. And now they're trying to roll it out like a science fiction game where these aliens are coming for you, you know, and you need to take all that money that we've ripped off all the missing trillions from the government. We're going to use that for the Alien Defense Committee, you know, and they're probably going to have Chris Mallon. He'll be the first alien defense commander, right?
Yeah. Not no one else, but certainly not me. You know, I was a deputy undersecretary of, I don't know, defensive
intelligence
capabilities, nothing burgers. But, you know, it's heartbreaking. I mean, the media is just, every time Lou and Chris open their mouths, they get, the media fawns all over them. Mainstream and fringe, you know, whatever it takes, you know, they're not going to, that's the power they have. It's they know that they have a numbers game. I think they're going to do this false flag thing no matter what. But I think it's a last ditch effort. Because after that, I'm telling you, and this document release coming up, that's going to be a sea of black ink.
Yeah.
And look at the last CIA info dump. I mean, my wife laughs at it. She's like, it's just black ink, redaction. They're not gonna tell, they tell you things, they just give you hot air.
Uh-huh.
No solid information.
Well, she was probably smart to get out of that particular outfit because...
Yeah, well, it seems she like married me and then they put the Nazi guy on her and chased her around a desk. You know, and they called her a philosopher, and that's what they do to people in the CIA who wear a white hat, who are into that, and they're like, oh, you're a philosopher. And so they gently make it harder and harder and harder for you until you quit.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there's, I mean, you know, her friends, there's a lot of, I've met a lot of disgruntled CIA people, NSA, DIA, who were, you know, gently shoved out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very bitter about it. But of course, nobody's going to ever put them on the official record. And they're actually afraid to do it because they've signed NSA documents.
Right. And those agencies are so out of control.
Yeah, they'll kill anyone. I mean, I've never been in the military and I've never worked for the U.S. government. I've never signed that contract. I don't know for sure, but some of the military people I've talked to say, if you go into the military, either as an officer or an enlisted personnel, and you sign those contracts in the teeny, teeny, tiny print, there might be something that says code 261ABC applies here. And what that means is once you've signed up and put that uniform on, we can do whatever we want with you within legal parameters. I can't, that's what I've been told. It makes sense to me. So they say, you know, these people like Lou and everything, you know, Lou speaks bits and pieces of the truth. If he was really going to go rogue, which I don't think he is, but if he was really going to do it, they do have the lawful right to ruin his life and maybe kill him because of that fine, fine print in his U.S. Army contract. I can't confirm that, but it does make sense given all everything else we know. So even if you put on a uniform as a private first class, you want to talk about what you saw in that hangar?
Right.
You know, these people aren't stupid. They're very linear and short-sighted, these black hats. These deep state folks, they're very predictable in a sense. They cover every tiny detail.
The you have a wood chipper analogy there. Do you want to tell us that?
Rather not. But where's the Tylenol?
we can leave it out. I've mentioned it.
I mean, Stephen Greer tells a story as well. It might be the same people that told him that told me, but I remember in the 90s, I was in the hall of the Russell Building and I was talking to some people about UFOs. You know, hey, I talked to Bobby Ray Inman. He says, you know, Bobby Ray Inman was very excited about disclosure. Well, the Navy's got all kinds of technology. He said, you know, he was very, you know, after the next election, they were going to disclose. No, we had 9/11 instead. Mm-hmm. But this is sometime in that area. And I can't remember who said it to me. I think a military person. And said, well, you know, these senators. And I said, why aren't these senators and congressmen more concerned about the UFO file and all this stuff? And he said, let's get out of the Russell Building. So we walk out. We're walking near the Capitol. I don't know. We got a hamburger somewhere. And he said, look, you know, if people on Capitol Hill, I don't know about today, but maybe in the 90s and the 80s and 70s, certainly the 60s, he said, a lot of these people, he's like, don't quote me on this. I never will. I keep people's identities. He said, if senators and congressmen dare interest themselves in the subject and they don't respond to the flight warnings and another firm warning, in rare cases, they are, you know, someone will come get them, a team of people, and put a bag over their head, stick a needle in their neck, knock them out, take them out to some farm in Maryland or Virginia, and they take the hood off. And once they came, come to, you know, their hands are tied, zip ties, and there's a line of 10 people. And they said, look to your left, look to your right. And they take one guy and they put him through the wood chipper. They take everyone else and they smash their faces in the bloody goo. And they say, you will not interest yourselves in our business anymore. This is private corporate business. Now, that wouldn't work with you and me. You know, we'd be back next week and they would chip us. But, you know, I could see that putting the fear of God into your average congressman or senator or anybody else in D.C. who's working in something and says, oh, I wonder what's in this compartment, you know, who has access.
It's an unbelievable analogy. I mean, he's really,
you know, that's Greer was told by someone that same story, but I was told that as well. And I talked to my dad about that. He says, well, I've never heard about that, but I know if someone breaches national security, they can be damn brutal with them. And, you know, he's referring to the NSA order that lethal force will be implemented. That's a legal national security right. And I think the Patriot Act solidified that in Congress legally. But before that, it was kind of a gray area in the law. But as you know, the law serves the system.
Yes.
Not the people. It corporations, rich individuals, corporations, you know, private entities, banks, the law protects mostly that. The little people, that, you know, you go to prison for a marijuana cigarette, you know, for life. You know, it's wholly unjust. And that's, you know, I have a friend who was a federal judge, and I'm like talking to him about this, that, and the other. He's like, you know, people nod confirmations to me at a restaurant, and then they'll just say, enough, I don't want to talk about it. But that's confirmation. And this is all very sad.
It is. It is. It's creating.
People laugh about it, you know, high vibrational states. as you and I discussed earlier, you know, it's just so psychopathic. I mean, it's madness. And I don't blame people for not believing the stuff we're talking about. I mean, it's just not in their reality. You mess with people's hard floor of reality. They just shut down because the darkness of it is too great.
Right. You're talking right now, you're speaking with a lot of people. What do you want them to know about what you've discovered about real UFO disclosure?
What is real UFO disclosure? I mean, I tend to give, you know, I cast a wide net. I listen to everyone who has a story to tell. I want to know everything before I formulate my own. And something my dad taught me. But I mean, you know, Chris and Lou, let's just talk about fundamentals. They don't talk about the 1952 overflight of Washington, D.C.
Right. You know,
by Germans.
That's a huge omission.
Yeah. Or, you know, all the UFO footage that you've discussed that's high quality. You know, all the what about the hundreds of thousands of civilian and military pilot reports that are on record? Yeah. I saw a mothership off of Seattle, you know, 5 miles wide, with UFOs. None of that. They just don't talk about it. They talk about the Nimitz thing only and maybe the Tic Tac. And it's like, when all said and done, they're going to be like, oh, Lockheed Martin. They might in the future say, oh, sure, there was Roswell, but we did all this high-tech gear from that one craft. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, it was German. There might have been an ET in there. We're not sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and because they really don't. I mean, I think Lou talks about ETs a little bit. You'd be more privy to that than I. I'm not sure, but there's no real UFO disclosure at all. My book.
No. And I mean, they ease off it quite a bit when it gets to aliens. They're like, well, we don't know, but we know whoever's in there is a threat. You know, the whole thing is the threat. It's like the bread and butter of the entire operation. Seems to me they want to create a new corridor of control and financing militarily for this threat. That's where it looks like it's going. And I think that's why they're using Mellon. Chris Mellon.
Yeah, I remember you saying that on one of your shows. And it's like, I don't think they need any money. I think the money funding streams are set in stone decades ago. I think what they're doing is they know the world, there is the Great Awakening. Everyone's at a different level. They know something's coming within 10 years. It's a possibility that some benevolent ET group said, listen, we want this, you to do this yourselves, but enough is enough. You know, we'll do it for you. And you won't want that because, you know, and they're like, no, don't do that. You know, this is some sub-level of the Pentagon, sub-sub-level. You know, and they're like, oh, don't do that. We'll do it. But so far, what they're doing is a whole lot of hot air and very little solid. It's like a soup, a thin soup with tiny bits of noodles and chicken in it. You know, way down the bottom. It's alphabet soup. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. But I think there are people in the military-industrial corporate complex that are white hats, probably with some ETs that are benevolent, saying, we're getting very frustrated with this. And if you don't start to really do some solid things, we're going to do it for you. And I think Chris and Lou are out there doing a song and dance because whoever they represent, they're the ones that want to slow it down to molasses in winter. I mean, look, we're pouring out the molasses, but it's minus 30. And in 25 years, you know, you'll have molasses on your pancakes. But, you know, that's what they're doing. And I think my gut feeling tells me that there are more than just you and I and the disclosure movement that are unhappy with this. There's a lot of people who enough is enough. And I, you know, personally, if everything blows up, I we're going to have to forgive and a lot of people. You know, you can't lock up millions of people. They have most of them are blackmailed or, you know, like that. I mean, do you want a salary? Do you want to starve? Do you want to, you know, make it so you don't have a job except at McDonald's? I mean, they can do all of that, or they could have done all that. I don't know about now, but
granting them clemency to come clean.
Yeah, I think a lot of deals have to be made with people. I think a lot of people want to come clean. They've been scared and blackmailed. that makes sense to me, given my whole life of experience. That does make sense. But what Curtis and Lou are doing, I think they're just trying to slow this puppy down to a glacial pace. But, you know, they can't keep Antarctica, whatever's down there, secret. China's on its fifth base. I mean, the Turkey wants one. I mean, we've got more than we can count. What is going on down there?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing. I have a friend named Eric Hecker. And he was a veteran of being in Antarctica. He was in the Navy. And he has a small channel, and he's trying to figure out what's going on down there. He describes this huge array called the Ice Cube Project, which is, you know, billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to do neutrino tracking. Oh, it's for submarine communications. Yeah. And, I mean, that's all tracking for UFO stuff. It's obvious. My friend Daniel Cross, Navy captain, said the Navy had satellites that could track those bastards punching in and out, superluminal. Now, that's beyond the speed of light, which I thought we were taught was impossible. You know, and they could track them 25 miles underneath the ocean or land.
Amazing.
And I was like, wow. And they're manned. I mean, you and I know the B-2 bomber is so expensive because that's a two-man crew that replenishes people in these satellites. And they track, and they fire. There's video footage of them, someone firing on a UFO. It's like, you know, gosh, do I want to land? And it's like, boom, 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 like a Star Wars cannon, you know. He seemed to think all that was funny. And I was like, well, actually, a lot of this isn't. You know, you got to understand where the payment for those technology comes from. Directed energy weapons, Scalar. He's like, oh, yeah, they have all that. The Army's LRAD system is a sound weapon. Well, they got that idea from the Germans, you know, Wunderwaffe weapons. You know, this is all convoluted, but it's all connected. And they're going to do this false flag thing, and we're just going to have to roll with it and try to hope that people will be, well, they're not telling us the truth. Maybe we should look over here, you know, to, you know, the fringe. But the fringe is going mainstream.
Yeah.
Slowly, but it's going mainstream. It's going to happen. I mean,
how dangerous is the secrecy mixed with this false flag narrative where they're just going to try and create a false threat? How dangerous a situation is that? I mean, they could inadvertently, by doing an alien false flag, pull Russia and China into a war scenario.
Well, that would really stink. I don't think that would happen. I think the Russians and Chinese, you know, we do a lot of cyber warfare, but, you know, when it comes to hot wars and nukes, you know, I hope there's a story out there. I hope it's true that a lot of our big nuclear arsenal was, you know, wiped out by benevolent ETs in the 90s. I hope that's true. But tactical stuff, they have stuff where the radiation signature dissipates in 24 hours. If you look up some of the big explosions in Yemen, they said, oh, it's an ammunition bunker. Yeah, just like Sebastopol was, and, you know, the big Gustav gun lobbed an atomic shell, probably. You know, I wrote that in my book. You know, I don't think a hot war will go that hot. They'll do maybe some conventional stuff, but nobody wants, you know, tactical nukes flying around. I think that's bad for business. It's very bad for international business. I don't think China would want that. Russians are not our enemy. That's all crap. They never really were our enemies. Yeah, the generals and admirals who weren't privy to the deeper stuff, they were ready to go with bayonets. But the rest of people were like, nah. You know, after the Kennedy and the Bay of Pigs, the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, I think they... When he was Secretary of Navy, my dad helped get a better, faster... communication system between the Kremlin and the White House and the Pentagon in case any of that stuff happened again. You know, he was involved in the SALT II nuclear talks of the early 70s.
Fantastic.
Very proud of that, you know, reducing this arsenal.
Yeah.
Which I think the Russians wanted to do as well. Everyone's like, oh, the bear, you know. I know a lot about the Russians. You know, they're very proud and tough people. I don't think they ever wanted war in the United States. When I went to Russia to visit Gorbachev, my dad and Senator Dole and all these other senators, you know, the regular Russian people we talked through interpreters, like, we love USA, here, blue jeans. And I remember trading hockey shirts for, you know, whatever. They were enamored with Americans.
Yeah.
And I remember the lines for McDonald's. This was 1990. It was right after the wall fell. Codel Doe. And they were, couldn't be nicer. We don't want a nuclear war with America. That's all politics and the media. Uh-huh. That's somebody's agenda to keep the Cold War going. It's good for business. Military contractors make money. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And we've been in the middle of that because when it gets person to person, just like Iran, for example, the Iranian people have a very high opinion of America, apparently. And the governments, you know, we've really targeted them out. One thing I wanted to ask you and kind of round this whole conversation out is, what do you think the misconception is? You know, because people say, well, you know, these big banking families, they're all in the Illuminati. They all get together and talk about depopulation. And, you know, certainly we've had those big families involved. We've talked about it. But how much of a kind of gross generalization of that? And what's the real story?
If they only knew some of these people, you know, they're so boring. And all they want to talk about is, you know, yachts and trips and clothes. And it's just ridiculous. I have the Warner 10% rule. And that says that across the board, it doesn't matter if it's the Committee of 300 Families or the rest of America, the 10% are very militaristic and conservative and businesslike. And the 2% are, you know, wear the Nazi armband. They're fascists, like my grandfather and Andrew Mellon. I mean, they just were.
Right.
I think I pieced it together. And when at these big colleges, and everyone knows about Yale and Skull and Bones and Scroll and Key. Don't forget that one. But at University of Virginia, when I was there, they had two secret societies. I think they have more now. No one knew the members. The Seven Society and the Imp Society, and there was another one. And I was like, wow, the only way you know a member is they put the seven on your headstone. So what I think is happening at these Ivy League schools and some of the other schools like UVA, which is not Ivy League, but it's a very good state school. I had a friend and I, when I was in college there, and when we were rushing fraternities, he said, we should go up to this one fraternity, the guys in coat and tie. I said, no way. Guys in coats and ties? Nerds and goofy preppy guys. No way. He said, no. They're giving out free cocaine and beer. Oh, okay. So we went up there, and they were very interested in just the two of us. The rest of our friends, they were like, yeah, we're not really interested because we were from these families. I was like, this is ridiculous. They've got a moose up here. They're the most boring, preppy guys. Forget it. I turned around and walked out, but he stayed for a while. But then we joined an animal house, you know, pan race, you know, animal house. And what I think happens is these secret societies, these mystery schools kind of deals at these colleges and universities. They go to these, not sororities, there's not many women. I think it's very patriarchal. Maybe some women, and they're like, oh, mingle and have a cocktail party with interesting alumni and other people and shadowy figures probably. You boys are great. You know, which one of you, you know, which you guys want to go into business or, oh, me, military or something. You know, or high finance, and then they say, oh, which one of you like Adolf Hitler and Stalin? And they're like, oh, yeah, they're not bad guys. Hitler was a Republican, you know. And they're like, well, how would you like to go to this other cocktail party? And that's the feeder system for the deep state. And that's how I think it works, is people think all these families are in cahoots with each other. Hell no. trust me on that. But at that top 3% of them, yeah.
I think they're recruiting inside, yeah. That. Yeah. Aren't
you, you know, we'll put you on the track to be chairman of Deutsche Bank or something, or maybe you want to be a general, or maybe you want to be, you know, in the intel biz or something like that. And they fast track those young men who have that mindset. I certainly didn't, you know. They can tell because they don't want somebody like me who's God forbid, thinks for themselves and, you know, is very well-rounded. They want somebody who's basically got fascist leanings. And they're like, oh, maybe he's got more Anunnaki DNA. I don't know. But they're more fascist, and they tap them, and it works, because you don't want to fill your ranks with people that are like, whoa, I don't want to be like this. No way. I'm going to tattletale to the press. Oh, no. You know, and this Bohemian Grove thing is very disturbing to me. And I have not known of any Mellons who attended, but I know some people who have. And I have a very, very bad feeling about that. You know, Moloch, the owl, Hecate, Inanna, you know, these are Anunnaki gods. It's no doubt they're into Babylon workings. You know, if it gets into pedophilia, I wouldn't be surprised, because that's blackmail.
Right.
And that's part of the dirty, dirty, dirty laundry of our nation. I mean, it just, when I first started dealing into that, I was like, oh, it can't be. You know, all these presidents went, all these wonderful people like Henry Kissinger. And I'm like, over the years, I was just like, oh, shit.
Wow.
When you really start to understand what the occult is all about, and it's like, you know, I don't believe in all that Babylon working stuff as per se, but they do. Mm-hmm. They certainly do. And it's a real phenomenon, you know, whether it gets into interdimensional beings and all that, you know, maybe, I don't know. But it does make sense in a really weird way if you go back to ancient Sumeria and Moloch, and, you know, giving your firstborn up, and all this stuff that's very, very dark. And I don't want to believe it. But my intellect says, no, you can't make yourself. You know, there is cognitive dissonance. Some people just walk away. But you really, you know, when you get deep down into your own core and your ethics, you know, you can't change that. And so.
Well, they certainly get a lot of control files from people who visit there, those occasions. And a lot of things are worked out there, as I understand, in advance. So if we're going to do the alien op, if we're going to do 9/11, if we're going to do the COVID op, we all get together there at Bohemian Grove, talk it out, and make the decision.
Yeah, it's absolutely guarded with tons of security. You know, at the very least, it's a place where masters of the universe go. There's a few women, I think, that go. But I tend to think, boy, wouldn't this make a great idea to blackmail people? And it's probably not everyone who attends. It's probably like, hey, you, why don't you come up to the, you know, the tree house, and we'll have a secret meeting. And of course, they probably drug them and put them in uncompromising positions, take photographs and video, and you are theirs for life.
Right.
You can't get out of under, you know, if you're photographed with underage children or what have you, you're done. Mm-hmm. You are done. There is no way you can, I'm not into that. You know, they have you. That's the deep, horrible thing of all this, is the blackmail. And that's where I get into, you know, these people, you know, you say about all these families and stuff, it's like, you know, probably out of that 3-5% who are on board with the fascist program, probably aren't on board with some of the really black, dark stuff.
Right.
And they're like, really? You don't like that party? Well, and then they blackmail them. And all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm a Nazi now. I was only a half Nazi. You know, I was a conservative Republican. Now I'm basically, you know,
now I'm at Eyes Wide Shut parties, and it's all over.
Yeah, and the CIA takes the 20 minutes out of that. You know what that 20 minutes was probably about. I'm surprised they made the film and released it at all.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, I don't know. There's rumors and conspiracy theories, you know, God forbid, that Kubrick was murdered after that.
Yes.
And of course, you know, Tom Cruise and that woman actress, I can't remember her name, they're both, you know, into the occult.
Nicole Kidman, yeah.
Scientology, well, there's...
You mentioned Scientology. But
there are bad rumors about them.
I mean, Hal Puthoff and a lot of that TTSA group, Scientology.
Thank you. Yeah, just there. Yeah. Oh, don't worry about that. You know, if you drill down on Scientology, you know, they have the Sea Org and, you know, they have all these minions to do your bidding. And of course, Tom Cruise up there, he's a celebrity. And the guy gets up there and they're all saluting each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a military organization.
Wow.
It's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And of course, L. Ron Hubbard, you know.
Crowley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain people privy to the UFO file. I mean, he probably knew some of the esoteric truth of the world. And they got rid of him. And Scientology went fascist.
Yeah.
I think.
Parsons, yeah. Crowley, the whole thing right there.
Jack Parsons. I mentioned him in my new book.
Okay.
What is your take on the story that he and Crowley did a Babylon Workings at the Area 51 site in 47 or 48?
I think there's a lot of truth to it. It makes sense. And they've been planning it for years.
Makes sense to me.
I
love how CBS, and that was a great show.
Yeah, Strange Angel. Right.
And then they had Crowley, and I was like, all right, they're going to do it. Can't do it. Oh, it's a great story, but you know, they didn't even show him Jack Parsons blowing himself up.
Yeah.
Or was he murdered?
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he was murdered. Yeah.
I read the book, and I know a lot about him, and what an interesting guy. I mean, but certainly, you know, it just, the military and the occult are just, I know that's a weird topic for people to graft, but I'm telling you, you know, I mean, look at General Marshall, FDR, Churchill, when they met, I had a chapter in my book. They're all Freemasons of 33 degree and above.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked to Freemasons. My wife and I went down to the Freemasonic George Washington Temple in Alexandria, Virginia. I started talking to the guys about symbology, and they were like, oh, well, I don't know. Because they're all porch Masons. Mm-hmm. They're sitting out on the porch of the big house. Right. And all the bigwigs are smoking cigars and drinking whiskey on the inside, talking about everything else. I'm like, don't you guys understand the esoteric stuff of this, that, and the other? And they were like, well, I've heard of that, but gee whiz, no. I mean, forget it. I mean,
most people think of it as just a civil group, you know, doing events at a VFW hall. Or
something. Yeah. And those are the guys doing the front.
Yeah.
The guys in the big house. Smoking cigars and talking trash. Those are the guys who have all the information.
Well, the history for centuries.
What have they really done for America? Sure, they've done some secret stuff. Was it positive? Was it negative? I don't know. They certainly haven't done anything in public. So what good are they?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a friend who's a Freemason. I'm not knocking him. But it's like, what good have they really done? I've heard they thwarted some plans of the British East India Company during the Revolution. You know, that made out like a bandit. You know, who won that war? East mm-hmm. India Company. You know, I'm sure there's a positive and negative Masons and everything in between, but it's like they haven't done anything positive and told us about it.
Well, it's more the culture of secrecy, you know, and yeah, that's really a big piece of this. Vannevar Bush was a major Mason, and he used all the same tactics for the UFO file for secrecy. So, you know, where does the secrecy get you? I understand being careful with the thing, but at a certain point, it's just a game to keep an advantage. And that seems to be what the Masons really have been good at. There's so many things we don't understand about the Masons. Truman was a Mason, of course. And so it gets us into, and this is something that Steiner said, which was that, and this is about 1915, he said that most of the American political situation was controlled by mystery school groups of the right hand or the left hand path. So you got some good ones in there, and you've got the really black occult aspects in there.
You know, I've thought about this a lot. I think most presidents were Freemasons, whether that's public or not. The only, maybe two, were not. And that is Ulysses S. Grant and Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson, you know, the Indian genocide, not good.
Yeah.
He went against the big banks. He hated them. Right. And I think Ulysses S. Grant, perhaps, he was more of a soldier, a bureaucrat, than really a president. But he, Mark Twain, you know, they were all, Mark Twain and Jules Verne and all those guys, they were in plus ultra six. Was it?
Yeah.
Another secret society with Tesla. You know, they were all kind of, I think the story is true about Solomon Andrews. I think Bosley tells the story in his books, which are very good. And I write about some of it in my novel, I incorporate some of his story. I want to thank him publicly for that. And Joseph Farrell too. But Solomon Andrews created this dirigible that had no means of propulsion, and yet it went 125 miles an hour and maneuvered like a fighter plane, you know.
Amazing.
In 1863, you know, I mean, it's a joke kind of, but I think most presidents were Freemasons. I don't think John Kennedy was.
No.
So I'm probably missing a few presidents that were not, but most of them were, you know, they had to be controlled. And oh, by the way, you know, Atlantis, you know, sure, that was fine. You know, Lemuria, sure, sure. Airships, well, you know, if you're a fascist, we'll show you that information docket. You know, but it's most presidents, you know, FDR certainly had, I think, he was more on the side of the light than the darkness.
Yeah.
People can argue with that. Come on. He went against his own class and the big banks and everybody. Yeah. He's, you know, he's one of my, I admire him. You know, I think it was General Marshall, personally, from my research. He was more of a bureaucrat that rose in the ranks suspiciously fast, him and Ike. But Marshall probably, I think, knew about the intercepts, Japanese intercepts, 4 hours before Pearl Harbor, and thought it best not to tell the president. I think that probably happened. I have a hard time believing FDR would do that. I know the nation needed to be galvanized. I don't think he would sacrifice. Being Assistant Secretary of the Navy, I don't think he would have sacrificed 2,500 and more wounded for that. But it's my, Marshall seems more and more like a cold-hearted villain to me, the more I research him. And I put that in my.
Yeah.
I say Marshall thought it best not to tell the president until after. Oops, sorry, but it was for the best. I didn't tell you. Or didn't tell him at all. You know, this is the dirty secrets of World War II, which I'm trying to illustrate in my book. And the occult and all kinds of other fun stuff. All that, but you know, they were all Masons, and God knows what other secret mystery schools and societies they belong to. You know, my grandfather, Scroll and Key,
right?
There were a lot of Yale types in the OSS. Probably they were all Bonesmen or Scroll and Key. These people were well read. They were into the esoteric information of the world. They believed it, and they knew probably that we were damn scared that we, you know, the OSS. And Roosevelt and the IPU, Interplanetary Unit, and Donovan, they Doolittle, all knew that probably the Germans were getting advisory help with their new technology, which I think is true. I believe the Hermann Oberth statement that they had help from people of other worlds. And they were like, shit, we are way, way behind. Way behind.
And so maybe they opened up their own... Yeah,
I can see them, Donovan, saying to Paul Mellon, say, we got a real problem over here besides the Luftwaffe, you know, attacking England. Here's what we got. And I could see my grandfather, who understood Manly P. Hall and Blavatsky and Gurdjieff, certainly young, and they were all consulted probably, and they were like, yeah, we've been trying to tell you this for 100 years. We got a real problem this time. And they're working on their atomic programs fast.
Right.
You know, sure, anti-gravity, a little free energy, and some Wunderwaffer weapons, but this nukes that you could fire either by the big guns or, you know, cobble together an airship and drop it high altitude from 60,000 feet. Because an 1897 airship, if you extrapolate that the Germans had some of that technology in the 20s and 30s, they could at least put something that had a plasma space-time bubble around it. But you couldn't fire recoil. Who cares about that if you have an atomic device, either crude or fission, and just drop it.
Right.
So my book, Lion, Tiger, Bear, is all about that. That they were working fast to do something. But I agree. I think Farrell said, even if they dropped a bomb on London and Moscow, the Allies still would have won. Uh-huh. I mean, morale would have taken a huge hit, but in the end, by 46...
Do you, that's really interesting, actually, I agree. The Bushes, you actually met George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, I met them both.
What are your impressions of the Bushes in the grand scheme that we're talking about? Of course, W was there with 9/11.
Bush Senior, I met a couple times. In 2007, in the Oval Office, it was Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. Now, if that isn't the three horsemen of the apocalypse, I don't know what is. But at the time, I was partially, you know, I was gaining knowledge. But I remember my ex-wife and I said, boy, I got a cold shiver down my spine. And she said, yeah, I do too. And she wasn't into all this stuff. But she was like, you know, I do too. Very, very strange. So I don't get a good feeling about the Bush family. I've certainly been privy to some dark stuff, and I've read it. I don't know what's true or not, but they certainly, with the WMDs and all that, you know, and as you and I and Farrell, I agree with that. I think WMDs had to do with Anunnaki technology and portals and stargates in the Middle East, which is the real Aladdin's treasure, Aladdin's cave. You know, Afghanistan is not a war to be won. It's an Aladdin's cave to protect. Tunnels, underground facilities, rare earth minerals, gold, heroin, you know, a spy on China, Tibet, all the Tajikistan. Dangerous people in Tajikistan, you know, we better keep an eye on those sheep herders.
The Baghdad Museum looting, that happened under Bush.
I write that into my book, this one. The Germans, most people don't realize it. Germans were in Iraq in 1940 and 41. Not a lot, but some Annenerbe SS and some Luftwaffe units and others, and the British kicked them out. What were they doing in Iraq? Now, Hitler was actually very enamored with what they called at the time the Mohammedans, which is the Islamic peoples, because of their religious domination by way of the sword. That is a Hitler quote. I admire these guys because they do it, for, you know, by the, these are people I can deal with. You know, and they hate the Jewish people, and you know, this, which I think are on different Anunnaki bloodlines. And so it's interesting that they were there. And there is a story, I think, someone, I got it somewhere, they did loot the Baghdad Museum in 41 before they were kicked out. Now, I write it that way. I can't remember if there's confirmation of that or where that story came from. Maybe it came from Farrell. I'm not sure.
German archaeologists were there in 2003 before the war happened. Yeah. So that is interesting. Yeah.
History repeats itself in strange ways, you know. Hey, CNN presents the Anunnaki SS 2021. It's just so weird and funny and bizarre that it's people are like, all my friends say, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds like you're making it up. It's like, you know what? I agree with you. It does sound like I'm making it up. But it makes sense if you understand the much bigger picture. And you certainly do, and I think you're fans do, and Farrell does, and others. But it's to get people to understand the full picture. And, you know, I admire everyone in the disclosure movement. Everyone's doing something, however small. But I think in my own view, and this is not a criticism, but just an observation, I think there's too much emphasis on, you know, there's got to be 500 pretty young women out there on the internet saying, oh, let me help you raise your vibration, buy this crystal. You know, peaceful, loving beings in the universe, and everything's great. Rays of light, and you know, beef up your chakras. And I think that's an important thing, but I think that's 50% of the equation. Mm-hmm. And it's human nature to turn away from that which we cannot or don't want to. People turned away from the Holocaust and Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin, and My Lai, and all that, My Li. And focus on the positive. And while I agree we should focus on the positive, it's a good thing to do. People are starting to ignore the dark side of this. And I do that only because of my observations of everyone on the internet. And it's like there is 10 or 20 people talking about, you know, positive vibes and chakras and crystals and higher dimensional, and getting ready for the fifth dimension and ascension. And then there's very few eyes on people talking about the darker aspects of this subject. And to me, it's no wonder people are infighting in this disclosure movement. I think that's been by design from infiltration, CIA and otherwise. But
yeah.
I think there's also a human nature quotient, which I've seen all my life. a lot of the people, when I talk about esoteric history, they're very interested. But once I start touching upon SS crimes, and they change the conversation.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I understand this is not polite cocktail hour conversation at the yacht club, you know, and they don't want to talk about any of it. Because, oh my God, if this is true, then they're going to take away my money and my privilege and my fancy job and my company or something, the deeper rooted fear. And as you know, fear is one of our biggest problems.
Absolutely. And brainwashing.
Yeah.
Which the media does. John, you put a lot of stuff on the record today. And I know it's a difficult time with the passing of your dad. You've opened up a lot about the Mellon family and also about Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo and the things they're doing with this false alien threat. What I want to ask you to kind of round the whole conversation out is, where do you think this is headed in terms of, you know, it's 20 years after 9/11, they've got the alien invasion op going over here. We see tons of misinformation in the media. Where is this heading?
Yeah, I mean, I'll preface that by saying again, my father and I have discussed this, and my wife, and they've urged me to come forward. But I think where it's heading is, we're certainly heading for a showdown of some sort. And speculation is rife. It's everywhere, one thing or another. I don't think it's going to happen the way anyone wants it. Not the people in the Pentagon, not the white hats, not the gray hats, the black hats. They're all gray. There's no good and evil, but dark gray, light gray. You know, the general public, it's going to be a huge mess. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be horrific. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be confusing. Confusion is one of the biggest weapons of the deep state, obviously. Keep everyone confused, and they just fight amongst themselves as the Anunnaki intended. Caste systems, race wars, inequality, everything to keep them fighting and confused. But at some point, this is going to crack open like the biggest ostrich egg, and the goopy, rotten egg is going to drip down on everyone. And this may not be what people want to hear, but I truly believe, you know, in some ways, we are all culpable. We all have blood on our hands, whether you're willfully ignorant or brainwashed or whatever, because law of one teaches us we're all one. So you can't just say, you know, everyone's pointing fingers. Well, it's those Committee of 300 and the deep state, and they're the enemy. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, these are our cousins, our sisters, brothers, fathers. We are all have a certain percentage of this on our hands. And I think that's going to be our big lesson, is that we're going to have to all work together, even if we hate each other, because we won't have a choice. Because certain people, when they realize, how did I not know this all my life? And they've been doing this over here. And it's like, well, where were you? You know, everyone asked me, it's like, how do you know all this stuff? And I said to a good friend of mine, who's a Harvard professor, I said, with respect, how is it that you do not?
Yeah.
All this stuff. And people are like, oh no, it's just CNN said, Chris Mellon said, Lou Elizondo said, you know. And I'm like, no. But in you know, it may seem like you and I, you know, you and I fight against the deep state and the ignorance, but at the end of the day, we're all gonna be, you know, because I believe whoever said it, you know, out there amongst the galaxy, the benevolent races, or even everyone, no matter what your polarity is, they view us as one race, one.
Yeah.
Because the law of one says, hey, dingbats, you know, stop fighting and nuking each other and realize we're all one and we're all, you know, we'll help you, but you have to take, you have to understand the culpability, everyone's personal culpability. And that's why I said to everyone, just like, read a book, help a neighbor, you know, mop a floor, whatever it takes, but be part of the solution.
Right.
But I think, you know, in centuries from now, they'll look back on this time period of Earth and they'll just say, wow, they were all fighting each other. Didn't they realize that we're all one?
Right.
Those idiots. John Warner, Daniel List, didn't they know? And it's like, I think I'm getting the idea that it's, you know, we're all culpable. And it's hard because I'm angry to a lot of people, very angry. But at the end of the day, you know, I knew about the Majestic 12 files in 1993. I didn't do anything about them. I told a few friends, they didn't believe me, but I didn't, you know, I really sat on my hands. And I'm kind of culpable like my dad in a way. You know, I own my own dirty laundry as he does his, you know, but it's like, we're all in this together.
Excellent point. Yeah, really excellent point. The thing I want to end on is, do you think the transhumanism and the transhumanist push is rooted in some kind of making us compatible with aliens in some way?
I think the U.S. Army came out with their super soldier.
Right.
Trans. You know, I think, you know, the DNA experiments are real. I do believe that. I think they're ongoing. I think they have been ongoing since World War II and Mengele and the Germans. So the transhumanist agenda really started in World War II with them, the death camps.
True.
I think. And so it's gone up to today where, you know, you can choose your gender and everything. And I believe in free will and freedom for everyone. They should do what they want. There's some, you know, it's an obvious agenda that Elon Musk and others and Bill Gates, they all want to, you know, my wife and I will not get vaccinated. Boy, we've had a lot of peer pressure. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
The point where I want to hit somebody.
Yeah. That.
And so, of course you can't tell them that it's transhumanist. Oh my gosh, the DNA, you know, the word is the Germans were using retroviruses in World War II.
Wow.
For their own improved Aryan soldier program. And so this is nothing new, I don't think.
Amazing.
If you want, technically, if you go back to the Spartans, they took the strongest and the best, and they weeded out the weak.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the same thing, but the Germans were doing it more on a scientific level. But, you know, I think, you know, there's been articles out about men becoming more feminine. I love my gay friends. They're hilarious. That I don't think that's an agenda, but there's something in that, you know, and I have to be careful with my words because I get enough hate mail. You know, you probably do. You know, it's, you know, I want everyone to have freedom of choice.
Oh yeah.
You know, but they are working hard at an agenda to say, oh, you know, do the man bun and take, you know, females heroin, you know, steroids. And pheromones and other things. And it's like, whoa, do what, you know, hey man, freedom, do whatever you want to do, but there's something nefarious going on here. And certainly with the vaccine, there's nothing, even people who aren't into conspiracy theories don't like it.
Yeah.
Because the
nanotech aspect, I mean, that is, you know, that's very secret scientific work. So it's, you know, whatever it is, it's large scale experimental, you know, so that it represents a danger. But that's interesting what you're saying about it. It's almost like they take something that's good, which is the culture is emerging and, you know, it's not so kind of conservative and locked in. And they're trying to use that to create this other thing. And I think it involves the technology, too, because the transhumanism isn't so much just about, oh, you won't have a gender anymore, which is already weird enough. But it's also about you're going to be part machine, you'll be enhanced human. Hey, look, I've got this circuit board in my brain. And there's a big push on this.
Yeah, I had a friend who told me he wants a chip. Something to do with music. He's like, I'm a music fan. I could download it. I'm like, no, don't do that. And they're like, I don't trust you, Warner. You know, they've swallowed the Kool-Aid on that one by and large. I mean, they've tested our compliance with the masks, and which my wife and I are furious. I can't stand wearing a mask.
Oh my God.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, they wear them somewhere and then they don't wear them. It's up to the businesses. But, you know, I don't know. The transhumanist thing is a big agenda. But going back to the Nazi SS, the experiments with retroviruses in the death camps, my thinking is, you know, that SS program of young Hitler youth and the young girls to, you know, and teenagers to breed. They might have experimented with the retroviruses in them.
Yeah.
On their own people. Well, they're safe. We've tested them on the people in the camp and they're okay. And to try to do the next generation of soldiers, you know, in 10 years and they're bigger and stronger and because of whatever retroviral DNA they plugged in.
Amazing.
You know that. I mean, the SS is capable of anything. It, you know, anything they're capable of. And we got all that stuff in paperclip.
Incredible.
All of it. The high altitude experiments, the cold and heat experiments. We got all that data. I'm sure of that.
Wow. John, incredible stuff today. Thank you so much for coming forward. You know, it takes a lot of guts. I know that you you don't toot your own horn in this regard very much, but I'm glad that you were able to come forward and say these things. The timing couldn't be better, and it's important for us to have that insight around, you know, Chris and around Lou Elizondo and also about the operation in general from someone who is inside that family and also whose dad worked deeply on projects that could be of a secret nature. So that background is really important, and I appreciate you coming forward with it.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, I know it's a weird story, but it's not one I'm proud of. This family history not to be proud of. I mean, I'm proud of my dad and some of his work.
Sure.
And but, you know, 6 months ago, he was like, you need to do what you need to do and come forward and say your, you know, he says, I trust your judgment. And, you know, without his urgings, I never would have. And my wife, too. She's, you know,
yeah.
Because this is not a willy-nilly decision. It's a sad timing of my dad's death. But he would have wanted it. I know that. And we just, my wife and I discussed it for months and years. And, but I mean, honestly, I didn't think anyone would believe me. It was just so weird and strange dots connected. And it, but finally, it's just too much with Chris out there doing this stuff. And it's like, wait, people need to understand why they chose a melon. You know, it's not willy-nilly.
It's well, you've done a great job bringing that kind of transparency forward today. I'd like to talk with you when the UAP task force report comes out.
You have to wake me up for that. I think I'm napping that day.
But it's been great to have you here. And I know people, you've really opened a lot of eyes on this today and really asked a lot of the right questions. And, you know, I know you didn't come out here saying, well, I have all the answers. You basically just gave us a lot of really good questions to look at.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had answers. They're few and far between. I admit that.
Are you working on a new book?
Yeah. A sequel. Yeah.
What's, do you want to give out any information on that one?
Well, it's called Lion, Tiger, Bear. You can look at it on my website. And I have two chapters that sort of give a flavor of it, but I mince no words. I come out punching about things that happened in World War II, the Honorary SS and other things. There's a chapter in the book with Crowley and Churchill. I know he briefed Churchill. So I think he was a triple agent, Crowley, as you well know. Very untrustworthy, but he was an MI6 agent.
Yes, yeah. Fascinating.
FDR met with him, I'm pretty sure.
From what I've seen in your books, they bring in a lot of very interesting threads and strands. So you have that kind of eclectic sense of these issues, which I think makes your writing interesting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't understand it, but you know, there are people that have emailed me and they're like, I get it. You know, disclosure type people, and they're like, oh man, I get it, but nobody else did. That's fun. I kind of, you know, you can enjoy it without knowing all the esoteric stuff. You know, just think I made it all up, and it's like, well, actually, there's a lot of truth. What? You know, but
you're going to learn either way. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah, I try to make it a fun, zany book. There's humor and satire in it to move it along, but I don't pull punches at the dark stuff. You know, I mean, I lay it out that I think World War II was a mass death ritual, and it was a proxy war. And I think there were unseen people from many dimensions getting their cut, the percentage. You know?
Yeah, and that's where this goes really deep when you get right down to it, because the kind of World War III aspect with the alien invasion, that's also one of those. Somebody's building that drum. They're beating that drum in the background. And I think what's interesting about all this is we need to discover who is doing that and who is the kind of puppet master behind pushing these people forward, promoting that threat.
I mean, it's like I said, there's more three-letter and four-letter agencies by the day.
Yeah.
They've sliced it all up so that, you know, we'll probably get a good idea who is behind it, but we might not know every single person involved. I mean, this might be after my lifetime, but I don't know. I hope not. I hope it, within the 15 years we'll have all this out. But boy, it's going to be a lot of mess to digest and sift through. It's going to be like a giant jumbo jet plane crash. What happened? We're sifting through all these bits of debris.
Yeah.
Because these people behind 9/11 and everything like that, they'll kill their own people. We may have to piece it together as very charred bits like they do for a plane crash. Does this fit this? Well, kind of. It's melted, you know. And that's what it's going to kind of be like. It's giant jumbo jet crash over a huge area.
Nice.
People are going to be like, what? How did this happen?
Yeah.
Well, we know some of this, and we'll try to piece together as best we can. But I think in the end, I think in 30 years, they'll know everything. I think. I hope. My grandson, you know, my stepchildren, you know, they'll understand the whole. But we're going to have to move forward as one people. That's our only hope. Because that's how they see us out there, as one race. And I don't care who's gone out there, if they've colonized, you know, humans have colonized other planets, they're still Earth humans. They're still lumped together with us.
Absolutely.
And I think the Space Force and everything, I mean, space mining bill, that's my favorite. Oh, we're not mining asteroids much. You know, all these things add up. It's just ridiculous. I don't believe in UFOs and ET. It's like, what about the Space Force? Yeah, you're right. I still don't believe in it. It's crazy.
What's amazing when we look at this is that almost the worst part of them pushing, you know, the secrecy on the UFO aspect is that the average person doesn't actually know a whole heck of a lot about it. And as a result, as we come into this kind of greater technology time, greater space travel, we're really, most of the culture is completely flying blind and is deprived of that information because a very small group is kept it.
It's got to be the worst thing, I think, because, well, it's not the worst thing. I think if the human trafficking thing worldwide is involved, that's the worst, and other stories. But certainly it's one of the worst things because most people, when this giant plane crash happens and everything's smoldering, most people are going to be on the outside going, What is a jumbo jet?
Right.
I'm trying to put this in an analogy. It's they're going to be like, what's a jet? Like, well, so you have to explain the fundamentals of how a jumbo jet flies, and what the black box is, and what a throttle is, and a jet turbine blade. You know, I'm a pilot. I like to put things in automotive or plane terms because people can understand that. But they're going to be like, what is an airplane?
Yeah.
And so we're going to have to, it's going to be this huge lift. But I think we'll have 20, 30 million people to help with that in 10 or 15 years. I really hope that it's true. Who can help with people? You know, I sit down with small groups of people and I talk with them. But beyond a certain level, it's like, well, you're talking about things that I don't even understand what it is.
Right.
Okay, let me... It's like saying, here's how a TR-33B is built. And they're like, I don't understand what carbon fiber is. I don't know what plasma is. And I don't know what space-time is or any of that. So we're going to have to start from the ground up with everything, which is, you know, that's the way it was designed. If it all blows up, they'll never piece it all together. And oh, yes, we will.
Fascinating. Wow. Incredible. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here.
Keep up the great work.
Thanks very much.
Just incredible information today, and we'll have you come back to look at the UAP Task Force report when it's available later this month, and also to discuss your upcoming book, Lion, Tiger, Bear, on advanced technology. Your voice is very much needed at this time, and we all applaud your courage in coming forward. Remember to visit darkjournalist.com for more deep interviews and documentaries, and join our newsletter. We'll be back on Friday nights with the X series all summer long. See you soon, and don't fall for the UFO threat op.